Welcome to the What's Your Thoughts on This podcast. I'm your host, Amir Ali. The topic of today's show is Fat Positive, the story of plus-size model Saucy West. You don't want to miss this. But hey, before you do anything, make sure you subscribe and share this episode with a friend. You already know, right? God bless you, everyone.
What's up, world? Welcome to the What's Your Thoughts on This podcast. I'm your host, Amir Ali. I'm an opinionated fat boy from the west side of Detroit. I was groomed in Chicago and shaped in New York, but in my heart, Paris is home. Join me on my quest to get answers and gain clarity on a plethora of controversial topics, current events, and political issues. It's a lot going on in the world that I want to discuss, so please, take a listen and tell me your thoughts.
Tell me what's your thoughts on, what's your thoughts on this, what's your thoughts on.
When I first heard the term fat positive, I was a little confused. I thought to myself, why would anyone want to be fat? In the past, when I gained even 5 pounds, I would skip a meal or two and even do an extra 30 minutes on the treadmill. Fat positive is a term used by many in the fat acceptance community. The fat acceptance movement is a social movement seeking to change anti-fat bias and social attitudes by raising awareness among the general public about obstacles faced by fat people experiencing the stigma of obesity. I have the pleasure of speaking with a member of the fat positive community, plus-size model Saucy West. And Saucy taught me some things, and she provided some alternative ways for us to think about being fat. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome plus-size model Saucy West to the show. Thank you for coming to the show today, Saucy.
How are you doing?
I am doing great, thank you. So you are a plus-size model, right?
I am. That is one of my hats.
I noticed that you use the word fat a lot.
I do.
And so I didn't want to come on and say, we have a fat model here, because then my listeners would have been like, what's going on? Why are you so rude?
Explain that to me,
because some people have taken the word fat as an offensive word, but you've kind of switched it and it's something positive to you. So can you elaborate on that for us?
Well, if you look at the dictionary definition of the word fat, it doesn't mean ugly. It doesn't mean unhealthy. It doesn't mean whatever negative connotation that people try to put with it. It just simply means that I have excess fat on my body or excess flesh. So that makes it an adjective which describes me. So I pretty much use that because I am a fat woman and I'm not afraid of that word. And a lot of people are. A lot of people try to sugarcoat it and call themselves fluffy, voluptuous. No, just call me fat. I just want you to call me fat. And it brings the power back to it, because that's always the first thing that people try to attack you with when you are in a larger body, is to call you fat. And I'm just like, okay, well, I know I'm fat. Tell me something else you think you know about me, because that's just obvious.
I hear that. So is that considered being fat positive?
Absolutely. That's a piece of fat positivity. Yes, it is.
Got it. I always call myself fat. Okay. And before the pandemic, I don't necessarily think I was fat, because I did pick up about a good 20, 30 pounds during the pandemic. But I would call myself fat. But then some of my friends who are of larger size would say, you're not fat, you're tall. Or they would always find a way for me not to be fat. Is there a certain size for someone that you would say that they should be or are considered fat?
I feel like if you identify with fatness in the scope of it, that you can relate as being fat. But what the problem comes in is that when people try to make fat a feeling, fat is not a feeling. Fat is, like I said, an adjective. It's something that describes you. So if you feel like you have flesh, you're a fleshy person, and it's not nothing that is negative, you're just saying, yeah, I'm a fat person. Then you can be a fat person. Where the issue that I have is that when you have the size 2 person, they eat a pizza, talking about, oh, that was so fat of me. No, you just a hungry ass person. That doesn't mean that you're fat, just greedy as hell. So don't try to place your internalized fat phobia on us just because you want to indulge. I'm an actual fat person, being in a fat body, a fat Black woman, and marginalized. So don't try to discount my struggle just because you want to sit up here and feel fat. No, don't do that.
It's funny because I have a fat friend. She and I have been friends for years, okay? She taught me so much, if I'm being honest, okay? Because being a person who, if I'm being honest, I'm probably average size. For me, it was interesting because it's things that she had to think about that I don't think about. When I go to a restaurant, I don't think about if I can fit in the booth or if I have to get a table. I just take the first available.
Exactly.
So have you had to deal with those type of things, being a woman of larger size? Do you have to put more thought into just regular things because of your size?
Absolutely. I have to think about if I go somewhere and their bathrooms are small. I have to think about if I go somewhere and they just have like high chairs, or if they have a booth and the booth table doesn't move. I have to figure out how many damn stairs I got to climb up, because I don't want to sweat off my contour. You know, it's things like that I have to be very thoughtful about, even in a place of business. I work from home right now, but when I was at work, I would have to make sure that they got me a chair that was able to hold, you know, so I wouldn't be at work breaking chairs.
Has that ever happened?
I absolutely have broken chairs.
So what happened?
I mean, just being at work and, you know, wear and tear on a chair that is made for a smaller body, it starts wiggling and, you know, all of that. And I'm like, hey, I can't continue to do this if I am supposed to be getting things that are like for my body so I can be working comfortably. You guys need to get me something that's for my body. And, you know, a lot of the places that I work didn't even blink an eye. They just told me to take out the chair and order it. I've had that privilege in the places that I've worked because I do work in a lot of like startup companies. But I know that a lot of people who work in like bigger corporations, they don't get those kind of privileges. They just have to, you know, hope and pray every day that their chair doesn't break, or that they don't, you know, they squeeze into the bathroom stall or whatever. Like, it's just all kind of things that you have to think about when you're in a fat body when it comes to accessibility and being comfortable. And a lot of people who aren't fat and who are not in larger bodies, it's not in their immediate scope when they're thinking about things. But that's the beauty of having friends who are fat, and who, especially who are liberationist or like into fat politics, is that they can teach you about how to think about your fat friend. Because a lot of people, they don't care. They're just like, oh, well.
Yeah.
But when people are open to that conversation, then if you are not fat and you have a fat friend, it's automatic. It's even when I'm in like in a relationship with somebody, they don't get it. Like, we're going out to dinner. I'm like, well, where you take me? Because you can't take me to the bistro, because the bistro chairs is little. You got to take me to, you know, somewhere else. Like, you have to think about those things.
So how does that make you feel, though, knowing that there are some places that you may be excluded from going to because of your size?
I'm sad that the world just doesn't accommodate people. Like, I feel like everybody should be accommodated, and I just won't give you my business. So I'm not sad for myself. I'm sad for the business. I've been in my body and loving myself since I was 14 years old. So I don't walk around with a woe is me complex. If you don't want to get none of this, then that's your problem, because I'm saucy. You know, you'll never see me walk around like, I'm not able to go to this. That's not my vibe ever in life. So
where did you grow up?
I grew up in pretty much in Vallejo, California. So I came out here and I had started experiencing a lot of just teasing, because I was always tall. I'm 5'11 right now, but when I was 19 years old, I was always the tallest one in my classroom. I wasn't a big child, but as I got older, I was.
Did anything happen where you started gaining weight, or can you remember when you started gaining weight?
No, it just happened, you know, gradually over the years. The only people who pointed it out to me was my family. And
what did they say?
You know, during Thanksgiving, are you going to get second? Are you going to get another piece of pie? Oh, maybe you shouldn't do that because you're going to get fat. You're already a little chunky. So that was coming from like from my family members, which, you know, ended in me developing an eating disorder at the age of 9.
What was the eating disorder?
I was bulimic.
So for the people who are not familiar with bulimia or they don't know what it is, can you explain what it is that you would do?
So bulimia is when someone purges their food. So you would either do it, you know, as you're eating normally throughout the day and like you eat and then you purge, or you binge and purge. Of course, the most familiar stories you heard of someone being bulimic is like Tracy Gold from Growing Pains. When you are in a fat body, it's different having an eating disorder because people automatically think that only looks one way on a thin body. But fat people also have eating disorders. So what I would do is, as a child, I would binge and then I would go and I would purge.
You would eat a lot of food and then go to the bathroom and just throw it all back up.
And it wouldn't even necessarily be eating a lot of food. I could just eat my normal dinner and just go throw it up. Or I would be at school eating lunch and I would go do it.
Do you remember what thought or what came into your mind to make you want to do that?
I just remember feeling like I was really full. And then in my brain, I would just be like, oh my God, I don't want to get fat. At first, I would use my finger, but after a while, I was so used to doing it, I didn't even need to do that no more. I would just throw up. And I was bulimic all the way up until the age of 14.
Wow. You know, it's funny because I was a fat kid. I remember as I got older, I got taller. And so others would say, like you said, you're getting big, or you're going to don't eat that, you may get a little larger. And it was this stuff. I don't want to pronounce it wrong because my cousin will talk about me, but there was this stuff that they would give you if you had a child and it would make them throw up, like if they had bleach or if they had anything like that. I think it was called, I said Ikapak, and my cousin laughed at me and said, that's not how you pronounce it. But they were giving these away. And so my mother was like, oh, get some of those because I have a younger sister. So I got some of those, but I stored them for myself. Okay.
Wow.
This is a true story. So one day I took the, it was like a liquid. So I ate and I drank it. And so nothing happened. I was fine. Like I was like, oh, nothing happened. About maybe 20 minutes later, out of nowhere, uncontrollable.
Oh my God.
Just throwing up everywhere. And I only shared that story to say that people don't understand the things that they say affect you. And at a young age, hearing people say those different things to me, I was never bulimic, but I wanted to try and say, hey, you know, maybe if I take this and I throw up, it'll work for me. It didn't work for me. How long did you deal with bulimia?
From the age of 9 to 14, I was found out from when I was at school one day and I was doing my normal routine. After lunch, I would go to the bathroom. But that day, something happened. I had threw up blood. I had did really bad damage to my stomach lining. Everybody was trying to find me, but I was in the bathroom on the bathroom floor throwing up blood. And one of the girls who knew what I was doing, she told the principal. And so I had to go to the hospital and they had found like a suicide note that I wrote.
So you were suicidal?
Yeah. And they also found out that I was a cutter. So they found that out when I was at the hospital, when they seen the marks on my body. Then I went into therapy after that.
So why do you think you were cutting and why were you suicidal at such a young age?
You know, I was being teased. You know, I was being teased about my weight. I wore glasses, just a whole bunch of stuff. And I just felt like nobody loved me, that I wasn't capable of being loved. But that age, you know, going into like preteen, teenage years, you know, you're seeing girls getting their first boyfriends and holding hands at school. But I didn't get that. I felt like I wasn't worthy of love. I felt like because I was chunky or fat, my family didn't like me. They didn't think I was pretty. Dealing with a lot of colorism stuff too in my family, like real talk. So I just dealt with a lot.
Your family is lighter?
It's definitely a mix with like my grandmother's sister's kids. Like they were a lot of like lighter skin. And even like my first cousins, they are also like mixed race. So it was always like, they were always so beautiful. They had the good hair.
So they wouldn't tease you, but you were just objectifying their looks versus yours.
I never really got told that I was a pretty girl. I never got told that. And again, like,
this, saucy.
Mm-hmm.
You're beautiful.
Oh, no, I know now. I know now. Now no, it's I a know. Totally different story. To I am the most I am the most cocky thing walking the streets. But back then it was like, I struggled with that, especially coming from your family. I could have probably dealt with my peers, but when it came from my family, it was just like that cut. And then like dealing with my peers, it was like the alcohol.
When you were cut, did you feel better after you cut?
I did. I just wanted to feel something. Yeah, it was just, it was weird. And it was just like, and I would just do it. And it would just be like these little, I still got some marks on me, but on my arm, but like these little cuts. And then I would just cover it up. No one ever knew. And then when I wrote the note, it would just be like, I'm just going to ride my bike to the bridge and I'm just going to jump. Like I would have those ideas in my head on what I was going to do. And it was a lot. I didn't think about like anyone really missing me or caring about me or anything. But I remember being in the hospital after everyone found out about what I was doing. And my grandmother was just crying. And we were really estranged for a while because my grandmother was the one that taught me about what beauty was, what glamour was. And she taught me how to dress a certain way when you're going to like entertain. She taught me like how to host and all of these things, what proper wine glasses to use. When all of this happened, the whole dynamic changed after that with me and her. It was definitely a rocky road that we went down after that, but she respected me so much as I got older and our relationship got really strong after that. But with me and going into therapy, that light switch moment happened with me on a personal level.
So when you went into therapy, you told your therapist about the wanting to commit suicide, the cutting, mm-hmm. and your bulimia and other things? Or was it just a focus on some of the things that you were going through?
So her name was Dr. Bally. And I remember she didn't even deep dive into things. Like she just asked me like, what do you like to do? What are your favorite things? Blah, blah, blah. I remember her telling me, oh, I want you to look in the mirror and tell me something that you like about yourself. And I remember that was the hardest thing that I ever did in my life was look in the mirror. She made me look at myself in the mirror and I remember crying. I said, I can't think of anything. And she was like, well, this is what I want you to do. The next time you come in here, I want you to give me one thing that you like about yourself. It could be anything. And so I remember coming back and I was like, I have this mole or like a beauty mark on my cheek. And I was like, all of the beautiful stars had like beauty marks like Marilyn Monroe. She was like, okay, the next time you come in, I want you to give me two things. It's like about yourself. And I was like, what the hell? She's asking me for a lot. It took me everything to give her this one. But it made me look at myself. And I came back the next time and I had 10 things, not just two.
That's what's up. So in high school, did you date at all?
I did date. Actually, high school was different. Basically, that summer, I was going through like therapy and stuff. And I was just, I changed. I thought I was popping, basically. So when I got to high school, I was wearing little mini dresses, little mini skirts. You know, I was in high school in the 90s. So we was wearing, you know, sodas, chunky heels. And I was in. Yes.
Cornici.
So I came up in high school. Like, I was it. I had cut my hair short, looking like little Monica, you know? So.
Don't take it.
I was ready to be me. I was ready to, and then whoever was around me, they needed to accept it because I showed all these chocolate thighs and everything, and I loved myself.
Do you remember what size you were in high school?
When I first got to high school, like in 10th grade, I was a 16, 18, which was significantly bigger than a lot of the girls at that time.
Okay. Well, yeah, and you're in California too.
Yeah. So it was, my high school was like Beverly Hills 90, but like the black version, black Filipino version.
How was it dating and being a larger person in high school?
What's funny is in high school is when I first met my daughter's father, and he was a track and field star in high school. He was a senior. He was handsome. And I was like, I want him. And I remember all my friends were like, can't get him. Like, they were like doubting me. But then I seen his girlfriend, and his girlfriend was plus size.
Mm.
She was bigger than me. And so I said, y'all tripping. I got a chance. I don't know what you guys thinking, but I got a chance. I was cocky, you know, like, oh my God, I think I can get him. Like, dating for me when I was younger, I wasn't tripping off of because I was taller, so I looked older. I met a lot of older men, so I wasn't tripping off of the high school boys. But when I seen him, I was like, yeah, I want him.
Did you get him in high school, or did you get him because you had a kid by him?
I almost got him in high school. I almost got him in high school. But like,
what's almost?
Well, we like...
Well, we
nothing didn't happen physically in high school.
What had happened was
I actually lost my virginity when I was 14. I was actually in a very toxic relationship. My first boyfriend, he was my age, but he came into my life when I was still dealing with my demons. He was the first boy that ever gave me any attention.
Did anyone know that you were having sex so young?
Nobody knew.
Wow.
And he would tell me things like, if we break up, nobody else is going to want you because you're fat. Nobody wants a fat girl.
So you are a larger person. Do you date larger men?
I date all kinds of men.
Okay, so you don't have a preference. No. If you're attracted and you like them.
Yeah. Gotcha. If I'm feeling your vibe, like if anything, I'm into the way a man dresses. Like that is a selling point for me. Like you can't be walking around looking like crazy. Like you have to have a certain aesthetic to you in order for me to like want you.
Yeah. When does your weight start to increase?
It gradually increased. Like when I first got in, I was like a 16, 18. When I graduated high school, I was like a 20, 18, 20. And then in my 20s, I was like a 20, 22. It just literally gradually went up. But because I was tall, it was just like, it is what it is. Like, I just thought I was getting my grown woman weight. That's what I called it.
Yeah.
I never really focused on it. It was like, if something didn't fit, then I just went to the mall and bought something that fit. It wasn't anything that I stewed over. I didn't look in the mirror and was like, I got to get on a diet. I got to fix this. It was like, well.
So you didn't diet at all during those times?
I did not diet at all. No.
Okay. So I'm like 6'2". Well, I'm just being honest. I'm like 6'2", 225, 230, something like that. And let me say maybe 235.
That's perfect.
Knows. But not for me, because I'm used to being a lot smaller. But the thing that I'm saying is that I get hot. Okay. And you live in California, where it's hot. That never affected you as far as wanting to probably lose weight or anything like that?
Have you seen my picture?
I have, but that doesn't...
Do you see what I wear?
We haven't gotten it to today.
Do you see what I wear?
I do.
I don't wear clothes.
Okay. Gotcha.
I always get teased because I own very few long sleeve things.
Okay.
So I feel like the weather needs to accommodate to me.
Do you work out at all?
I do, but that's not what the focus of my brand is, so I don't talk about that at all.
Why not?
Because I feel like everybody wants fat people to talk about how they maintain health, and everybody always wants to focus on people being a good fatty. Like, as long as she healthy, it ain't none of your business if I'm healthy. And, you know, so I don't feel like I owe anyone an explanation to what I do in my personal life. Like, as far as what makes me feel good, because it always opens up a conversation about dieting. So no matter what a fat person does, like, for example, there are so many plus size influencers that talk about how they work out. But the conversation underneath that, the comments underneath that, it's very diet culture driven conversations. Like, Oh, girl, it did look like he was getting smaller. Ooh, girl, good job. Oh, man, yeah, you're going to be snatched. Da-da-da-da-da. I don't want that conversation in my comments. I want the conversation to be, wow, look at Saucy. She's wearing a bikini. I can wear a bikini, too. Wow, look at Saucy. She's wearing her back rolls out. I'm going to get me that dress I seen, and I was scared to buy. I want that conversation. Because there's so many conversations already around fat people and weight loss.
Well, I have friends who are larger and they work out and they're not working out to lose weight per se. They're working out to be active, to get the heart moving. So when I asked about you working out, it was because some people will look at you and say, oh, no, she doesn't work out. And I was asking just to kind of gauge, because I know you're happy where you are, but everyone individually, you know, does do things a little bit differently. So you did say something that I do want to get into. What is wrong with being smaller?
Nothing.
Okay. So if you did lose weight and a person said that to you, why would that be a problem?
Because you don't know what anyone is struggling with. My mother had cancer. She was a plus size woman.
Mine did too. I'm sorry to hear that.
But nobody knew. But they congratulated her on her weight loss.
Mm, got you.
I have an eating disorder. There are other people who have an eating disorder. I'm a survivor of my eating disorder. But what if I was somebody who struggled with their eating disorder? And you told me that, oh, you look good, girl. You look good. You're getting small. But you don't know that I haven't eaten in 4 days.
There's always a reason why something may offend someone or a reason why something is happening. So I definitely get what you're saying totally, because my mother had cancer and she passed away from it. It's this thing here that I think when it comes to social media, we put our pictures up no matter what your size is or your race. Okay. And we put these pictures up because we want someone to say something about these pictures or we want to share or something. So people are going to give us their feedback on whatever we put out. So with that being said, is that even if you didn't work out, if I saw you and I saw that you were smaller, I would probably say, oh, wow, you know, you're looking good in this picture, boo, you're looking a little smaller. Okay. And I remember one of my friends saying to me, how come is it that you can give a compliment to me when I'm losing weight, but you don't give the compliment to me when I was just fat? And I understand what my friend meant, and I understand why they said that. But I think certain things are associated with certain things. So I guess I understand what you're saying, but it goes about intent, right? What the person intended, not necessarily the outcome.
But see, I think that's the reason why a lot of people need to be educated in fat politics and the advocacy of fat people and fat bodies, is because if people were educated in this more, then they would know the nuances to why that kind of conversation can be a little bit problematic and that people should be a little bit more thoughtful when approaching people in terms of weight and weight loss. So I think that people who are driven in the societal norms of what bodies should be, that conversation probably is very normal. But I think that when it comes to body politics and fat politics, that the parameters that are set with that conversation are to protect us and our rights, to protect us from whatever trauma that we may have went through, and make people aware that fatness is not a bad thing. It shouldn't be the focal point of every conversation, especially getting slightly deep in the African American community, because our internalized fat phobia is very real. So like when I'm around certain people of certain nationalities or whatever, that conversation might not happen as much. But if I'm around my people, and we at the cookout, and we like, oh, I shouldn't be eating all this. You know, I got, you know, I'm trying to, that conversation always happens.
You said there's nothing wrong with being fat. But is there a size that is too much where it is dangerous?
I'm not a doctor. I've been asked this question so many times, and it's like, I believe in body autonomy. So whatever someone does with their body is their business. It's not for me to judge them, because guess what? Someone's judging me as a 450-pound woman, and they're asking me how am I able to walk. To me, that's like ableist. It's fat phobic. And it's no one's business, because I can't imagine what people are probably saying about me. Actually, I can't, because they say it to me in my comments.
People are going to say everything about any of us, because there's different sizes where, like a model. There's Naomi Campbell, and then there's you, because you're a model as well.
Yeah.
But then there's certain people who say, well, you need to be this size. So I'm not saying that we are judging or anything, because there are people out there who are like 800 and 900 pounds. Do you think that's healthy?
I just, the activist in me, I can't answer it. It's just not right to judge anybody because of their size. I can't do it.
No, I totally get it. So from your standpoint, be whatever size you want to be and love it and enjoy it and embrace it.
Like I said, body, because that's the beautiful thing about body autonomy. You can do whatever okay. you want with your body. So if you are this weight and you don't like being that way, change it.
That leads me to my next question. So like Monique was a fat activist. Lord. Yeah, that's why I'm bringing her up. Okay. And I, like I said, I've been blessed to have a friend who is of larger size, who is absolutely beautiful. And so I've learned a lot of things from her. I would say it's probably like about maybe 25% of things that I don't agree with her on, whereas before it may have been 50. So it did help having her as a friend. But however, at one point, Monique was looked at as a fat activist, a fat ally. Okay. I noticed as Monique started to lose weight, she lost those allies. Why do you believe that is?
Her language changed. It always feels good to see the fat Black woman loving herself and being happy and being, you know, powerful in what she's done. And that's how Monique was to fat community when she came. She helped a lot of women embrace and love their bodies. And that's how she got popular. But she began to lose weight, and then she changed what she was telling fat people. It was like, no, you can't be like this or you're gonna die. And that was a blow to the community, because, you know, at first we're being told that we should love ourselves and be happy with who we are and what we're doing. And we have this kind of martyr situation, like she was a leader, and then she kind of left us behind. It hurt a lot of us. It hurt me, I know, as a young fat woman and looking at that. But I took it to myself, like, I'm going to be a better leader than that. I'm going to be more consistent with my community. That's what I just took it as. It's like, I guess I got to step up. And every fat person that came behind her, they did the same thing. I had to listen to community be sad, because it's been done over and over again. Like, we have fat people who come and gain popularity, and then they lose weight again, which is their business, body autonomy, right? But just because you lose weight doesn't mean that you have to fat shame people into losing weight too with you, just because you had an issue or you had whatever problem you had with your body. It doesn't mean that you have to kind of group everybody together and make everybody feel bad about their bodies.
I've been a lot of sizes, and I don't think when people have told me or even suggested things that it made me feel as if they were fat shaming me. But like I said, my size is a lot different than another person. A person larger may have felt that way. When my mother passed away, I gained a lot of weight. I was fat. And I felt awful. I did, if I'm being honest. I felt awful, not necessarily because I was fat, but because I looked so different than what I used to look like. And that was what the problem was, really. It was because I didn't recognize myself. okay? And I remember I had went to a family friend's funeral and they saw me, and I had called my friend and to tell them, hey, sorry about your loss. And I heard them in the background say, oh, is that Ali? Oh my God, he gained so much weight. And I felt horrible, but it was the truth. And that's the thing I think that with sometimes I don't understand with people is some things are true. I did gain a lot of weight and I was not happy with how I looked. It did not feel good to hear, but I didn't necessarily feel as if they were fat shaming. I cried, I felt bad, but it gave me the motivation that I needed to get some things done. Okay. So my question for you is not judging anyone else and all of that. We're speaking directly about you. Okay. You go to the doctor gives you some news and says, in order for whatever not to occur, you need to lose some weight. What do you do if given that type of information?
I find another doctor.
I know, like in Monique's situation, I think she did have some health issues and health situations why she needed to start losing weight. I can't say for sure, but I remember her journey and I remember being interested in it because Kina was at the time. And because I think she had some show called Monique's Fat Chance or something. So you said if given some information where a doctor suggested in order for something not to happen bad, that you should lose weight, you would look for another doctor.
Yeah.
Why?
Because weight loss is not the cause. And this is common clinical research. You can look this up online. There is absolutely no disease or illness that is linked to being fat. And that research was put out over 2 decades ago. So the problem with Western medicine is that they link everything to being fat instead of finding what the problem is and fixing it. So I feel like in other countries, in other places, they will say, oh, this is wrong with you. All right, we're going to do this. We're going to do X, Y, Z. It's not a automatically, oh, you fat, you need to stop or you're going to die. It's not like that. It's only like I hear. Just like they, like pharma and all of that, they try to push drugs in us. They try to do everything to us instead of solving the problem. And especially now that I've seen my mother dissipate before my eyes because they had her on morphine and they were not assessing what was wrong with her. They didn't assess that maybe the chemotherapy had penetrated her bone marrow, which may have been the issue with her immune system depleting, and they didn't fix that problem, but pumped her with morphine. She went to the hospital. 9 days later, she was dead. And that's the problem with our medical industry, is that they automatically try to put something on fat. When it is common clinical research, that is not true. Because anybody could be diabetic. Anybody could have high blood pressure. Anybody could have hypertension. Anybody could have heart failure. Anybody can do anything of any size, and it's not necessarily linked to fatness. It is proven. So I would just find another doctor, or I believe in holistic. My friends make fun of me all the time because I'm over here doing Ayurveda, I drink diatomaceous earth. I do all kinds of things. I take magnesium. I do all kinds of things because I have this body. I love it, all of it. And I'm going to maintain it. And I want to feel good.
Good and strong. Sea moss is good for that.
Yeah.
Let's say you have a friend, and I know like people, we like to work out together when we work out. So you have a friend and they had started working out for whatever reason. Okay. And they lost a lot of weight naturally. Okay. And they have now started to share that on their social platform. Would you unfollow them and do you think you could still be friends?
I would mute their posts. I wouldn't unfollow them. I'm not going to push anyone to do anything, and I don't want anyone to push anything on me. I'm grateful that I do have friends and community, so those conversations really don't happen with me. But I do have a friend that is smaller, and she works out religiously. But she's also, I've known her for 20 years. And when I met her, she was really small. And now she is bigger than she was when I first met her. But she is absolutely excited about that. But she does work out to maintain. And the conversations just don't happen.
The girl, you said you would mute the person, right?
Yeah.
They're not asking you to lose weight or to do anything. They are just now on a new journey in their life. Why would you mute them if they're just on a new journey, but they're not pushing anything to you?
Because I want my algorithm to be filled with things that spark joy with me.
So that's triggering for you?
It is sometimes. And not triggering for me to say it's going to make me go and revert to my disorder. It's just right. Like there's so many beautiful things in community that I could be looking at. Instead of someone giving me before after pictures or telling me that all they had today was water. Like, I don't want to see that shit. I want to see fat bras going to the beach and in swimsuits. And I want to see people making charcuterie boards. And I want to see things that spark joy.
Joy for you.
Joy for me, because working out to spark joy in somebody else, that's just not my vibe. That's not my bag. My bag is something totally different.
I can look at you and see your beauty and see what you offer to the world. We don't share the same beliefs with a lot of things, but if you come across my feed, I'm like, oh, look at her. You know, she's getting it, right? Good. She looks good here, which I did. I follow you. And we don't necessarily agree with the same things, but I can look at that and that doesn't spark anything because body autonomy. I can look at a smaller person and feel the same way, whether or not they're working out or a person that's eating a whole bunch. We follow so many different people on social media, even though usually if I follow you, I think you're cute. If you and I were friends, and you unfollowed me because I lost weight, that would hurt me because I would want you to share in my journey and as I share in yours. As you, your experience is different than mine, but as your friend, I share in that journey with you. So if I make a change in my life and you now have decided that you're not going to unfollow me, but you're going to mute me, which then shows that you're not supporting because I'm not seeing you like it. That would hurt my feelings.
If we're friends, then you shouldn't have to get validation from me on social media, right? I think if we're really friends, like outside of social media, screw social media.
Then it shouldn't matter.
It shouldn't matter. Like I'm going to know about all the good things that happen in your life outside of social media.
I wanted to play devil's advocate just to see. But let's move on. So how did you get into modeling? And at what age?
I started modeling when I was about to turn 30. I've always wanted to be a model ever since I was a little girl. Ever since I was. Since I seen Mahogany with Diana Ross. But I didn't think that it was something that I could do. Because
how did you get into it?
I met a woman named Tigress Osborne. She had a company called Full Figure Entertainment that was based out of Oakland. One of the aspects of that company was that she threw a plus size centered nightclub event. So I would always see them on Facebook and they would always have these models on the flyer. I used to go to the club back in the day and they would have like Rihanna or J-Lo on the fly, and they weren't really there, but she had actual visibly fat bodies on the flyers with fat models. And so I went to the club and I met her, and she was like, the first night I went, have you ever modeled? And I'm like, no, I've always wanted to. She was like, give me your email. And so I was one of her promo models. So I was on the flyers and I would be at the club and hyping up and all this other stuff. But from that, I started getting in the inner circle of what the Bay Area was doing when it came to like fashion shows and stuff. And I remember people were saying, just go on Craigslist. And you'll start seeing stuff just buzzing or whatever. And I seen that somebody was doing a fashion show in the Bay Area and they were looking for size whatever to size 22. And at that time I was a size 26, but I said, I'm going to go anyway. I'm going to go and try out anyway, because I want to do it. I can walk in heels. So I remember I did it and I got hired to do the job, to be one of the models. And this is when I first got my first taste of what fat phobia felt like in the fashion industry. We're getting fitted for designers and stuff. And I was the biggest model there, but they didn't have anything to fit me. But it was one designer who had a jacket. And they were like, well, do you have black leggings, black tank top? And I did. And I walked on the runway and just wearing a jacket. Everybody else was, wearing clothes. I just had this jacket on, child. And I just was like, but I did. And I made an impression. And from there, I just started, every time I seen a model call on Facebook or on Craigslist, I would go. And a lot of times they would pick me. They didn't have stuff to fit me, or I would have to squeeze in the stuff or whatever. And a lot of the time, the designers in the Bay Area, they didn't want to use me. Like, it was like this like secret circle of like hate towards me, because I was unapologetic about what I was doing. I was like, use me. I'm a model. I'm professional. I'm here on time.
Yeah.
I'm here to work. And every time I came out on the runway, it was hand claps. It was people, you know, who
got a good reaction.
So yeah. Use me. So I was actually got really discouraged after a while, because it was a lot of, like I said, it was a lot of fat phobia that was going on. And in the plus size community within the Bay Area, I would have designers say, oh, they don't want to use me because my stomach, I don't have an hourglass figure. They wanted to put like Spanx on me and all this other stuff. And I just remember like saying, I'm not going to do this anymore. Like, I'm not going to conform to what they think that I should be. And I stopped doing shows in the Bay Area for a while. And I remember I got a call from Tiffany. She worked with Scorch magazine. And you know, she said, I seen you on Instagram and I want to bring you out to LA. And that was like the first paid modeling job that I got. And I posted on Facebook, hashtag published. I was flossing.
She working. She getting paid. She a model, official. Right?
And after that, they was trying to make me booked and busy. The same people who discriminated against me.
Is that how you got started into, because of the experience that you had before you became booked and busy, is that what motivated you to start working with brands to make them have sizes larger than 5X?
So that came a little bit further down the road when I was starting to actually do research into like becoming more like an Instagram focused creator when it came to that, because I knew that I wasn't going to get picked up by an agency just because I did not fit the criteria that any agency was doing at that point. Like, no matter how pretty I was, no matter how good I was at the runway, I was not getting signed with agency. So I had to do a different route. And I said, I'm going to use Instagram. So I would invest. I would like be shopping around, like buying clothes, posting on Instagram, tag the brand, blah, blah, blah. But then when I was going around, I was like, wait a minute. Now, mind you, by this time, I had took a small break because I had my daughter. I had gotten a size bigger after I had my daughter. So now I'm in extended plus. So I'm at 28, 30 at this time. And it was like scarce, like hardly anything.
Yeah.
And I said, well, this ain't right. This is crazy. Like, why can't I buy clothes at this size? I'm fabulous. Like, I want to wear a bodycon dress. I want to wear certain things. Like, why are these things available? Why I gotta be walking around here? I want to wear a bikini. Why I gotta walk around here in a swim dress, you know, or a tankini? Like, why? I mean, so those options were not available. They're available to smaller sizes. I was like, well, this ain't right. So then I just started just actively looking at brands that were doing this. And after that, I just made it part of my mission. Now, mind you, I had started being around activist community during this point. So when I met Tigress, she introduced me to activist community. And I told her that I wanted my brand to bridge the gap between fat activism and fat fashion, because I felt like my body is a political statement. And I
Hello.
Have to do this.
Yeah, right? We hold these truths to be self.
So I was like, since me being fat, waking up in the morning, going outside and walking around, that's political. And I can't just forget that just because I want to be a model. I have to incorporate that in my brand, because that's the problem in the community right now, is that people don't bring politics into this. And that's where stuff gets lost. So I said, I don't want that to happen with me. I want to always stay grounded with who I am and what I want to do. So that's when I changed my whole thing. Like, I'm not working with anybody who doesn't go beyond a certain size.
Have you been successful in showing them the benefits of having a larger size?
Yes, I work with a lot of indie brands. So at this point, I have not yet to work with a big brand and help them in size expansion. But when it comes to me working with indie brands, I do know that when I post something, it sells out. So the metrics are there. They know that fat people shop.
Yeah, especially if it's not a lot of, you have to think about it, because you said beyond 5X, so let's say it's 6X, right? If most companies don't have something for 6X, those people who are 6X are going to gravitate towards that because it's actually something that can fit them.
Now I'm at the point where I've been on social media, on Pondy Twitter, talking mess, advocating, causing a ruckus, talking mess. And I said to myself, I was like, well, I'm doing all of this talking, but I'm trying to be a leader in the activist community. Well, what was my ancestors doing when something wasn't right? They were taking a stand. So that's when I said, I'm going to do a boycott, and which I rolled out last Friday, and under the hashtag Fight for Inclusivity. And I have a list of plus size brands that claim that they're inclusive, but they stop at a 3 or 4X. And I also have a list of brands that go beyond that. And I'm asking the community to support those brands and stop spending money with the brands who claim that they are about us, but they're not.
You know, it's funny, because I remember when Beyonce was doing the whole Ivy Park thing, the first drop, and I was talking to Kina. Kina, don't kill me. I was talking to Kina and I said, have you checked out Ivy Park? And she said, yeah, they're not going to have anything for me. I said, well, I was told that they had plus size stuff. And I think the first drop only went to like 3X, right?
I think it was like a 2X.
Well, I know it wasn't a lot, because her report back to me was like, why did you have me look at this? But what I do know, though, is that the one of the drops, when they had the green,
4X.
It was up to 5X. And I think it might even went to 6X, because a lot of larger people were like, oh, wow, I can actually get something. So I say all that to say that people are listening when you speak. People are listening when we say things on social media. So I commend you on seeing that there was a void in the market, because you're right. It should be clothes to fit of all kinds. It shouldn't just be muumuus or big old dresses. It should be clothes of all kinds for people of all sizes. But we have to have people who are willing to take a stand and fight. So I commend you on doing that and seeing and doing something about it. So congratulations.
Thank you.
But saw something about you with a 400-pound runway. Elaborate on that for me.
I am the first 400-pound runway model. So, and again, when you are in community and when you are, especially when you're in this industry, it's like Mary J. Blige is the queen of hip-hop, so Saucy West is the first 400-pound runway model.
I think that's awesome. You talked about looking in the mirror when you were younger. I think you were 14 when you spoke with your therapist and you didn't have much that you could look at and say. What would the woman now, when she looks in the mirror,
damn,
what does she say?
Every morning. No, it's like, seriously, it's like, I look at myself and I look at how beautiful my skin tone is. I look at how beautiful and full my body is. I look at myself, I've had a child. I've endured so many things. I look at my back rolls and I see the sensuality in all of me. I look at my naked body every day and I get so happy and sometimes turned on. But I look at so happy. You know,
you turning yourself on. What? You that bad, baby?
And, you know.
Listen. I don't turn myself on when I look in the mirror. That's why I have to watch porn.
You gotta put that fat girl porn.
I mean, that's what's up. Listen.
Well, yeah, but
I'm sorry.
I am very much into myself and how I feel about myself. And again, like, yeah, you know, that's a different level of just like,
that's good.
And that carries over, like, loving yourself. And a lot of people in body positive community always talk about, saying love yourself is so cliche. No, that shit is real. You have to love yourself.
Yeah, it is.
Before you can do anything
before
else.
Before you can do anything.
So even in an intimate relationship, because I have dealt with a lot of men, and every time I come into an intimate situation, and I am unafraid to take off every article of clothing I have on without a Spanx, because I don't wear that shit. So I just take it off and jump in the bed and lay there like, you ready? And they kind of in shock, because I'm just like, I don't know what you thought.
Right.
I'm like,
that's attractive. That's attractive.
It is.
No, it is, because I think confidence is attractive of all shapes and sizes. To be honest, like, if you look at Lizzo, right, her confidence, even if you're not into that type of person, her confidence makes you not look at her like you might look at someone else. And I always tell people that if you are negative about yourself, you're pushing the negative out. But if you're positive about yourself, you're making me see that. But I did want to say one thing for everyone listening who has ever thought about suicide. I think Saucy is a great example of why you shouldn't. She was once a 14-year-old girl who was cutting herself. She was bulimic and throwing up after meals and, you know, just not feeling the best about herself. But the woman now is a runway model, is a mother, is a woman who looks in the mirror and finds herself attractive. You do have something to live for, even when you think you don't, if you just give it some time and just give it some time. So what would you say to the young fat girls and men out there who don't feel good about themselves, who are larger, who are going to the stores and can't find clothes to fit them, who are wearing things that are too tight or just embarrassed or insecure? What would you say to them?
I would let them know that there's a whole community of people who are ready to envelop you and embrace you and love you and educate you on the beauty of who you are at this moment. and you don't have to wait to lose the weight to begin to love and enjoy this life that we have. Because so many people are waiting for this weight thing that hovers over us all, waiting to live. You don't have to, because there's community here for you. I live now. Hashtag live now.
Hashtag live now.
You don't have to wait for your weight to live.
Yeah.
Do that shit.
You mentioned that there are fat communities. Can you name some of those communities? Because some of the people listening may not know where they should go or where they can find some advocacy.
Definitely first go to the National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance. It's called NAFA. NAFA is an organization that has been around for 50 years and has been about fat politics and fat communities. They do so many different things, like online webinars and conferences and all types of things to teach you about your rights as a fat person. They also look up the Healthy at Every Size movement and the book Healthy at Every Size by Lindo Bacon. They are a fat ally and have been for years in community. People like Sonia Renee Taylor, an amazing speaker and author who has woman of color, because don't forget that people of color, Black people of color, is who started fat activism, and body positivity is the offspring of fat activism. So people don't understand that. Look up the history on those things and follow people on social media that inspire you. And you never let anyone make you feel like you have to fit into the mold of what society thinks that we should be.
Wow. Well, you have enlightened me. I commend you for sitting through some of the tough questions and answering them with style and grace. I appreciate that. I'm going to look in the mirror and see if I can find myself attractive. But I thank you so much for your time, Saucy.
Yeah, let's do it.
One of the greatest things about life is you can do whatever you want. We might not agree with everything that Saucy had to say, and that's okay. But one thing is for sure, Saucy doesn't care. She is living and enjoying her life as a person, as a woman, as a human, who is not only fat, but who is absolutely beautiful. I salute you, Saucy, for choosing to live your life on your terms. For more on Saucy West, you can go to her website, www.saucywestplussizemodel.com, or follow her on Instagram at Saucy West. That's our show for today. The music used during the interview of this episode was produced by Fire Lord. Thank you for listening to the What's Your Thoughts on This podcast. We truly appreciate your support. Our show is produced by Amir Ali. Our theme song was written by Amir Ali, produced by Adrian Brundy, and performed by Enrico Delves. If you would like to be a guest on our show, or if you have a question or you want to provide some feedback, send an email to WYTLTpodcast@gmail.com. Our podcast is available on all platforms, so make sure you subscribe to our show and follow us on social media. Be well, be safe, and be blessed. Until next time.
Audio post-production by Yaya Podcasting. YayaPodcasting.com.